Chapter 20. Interception. Revelations. Infernal. They looked, but they did not find the shimmer knife on Halm when they searched him. The spy had hidden it inside a flesh pocket on his inner arm that only a close inspection with the Medicare Auspex would have revealed. The other pilgrims surrounding him submitted to the same checks without question, some of them quietly accepting, others giddy with anticipation. When the believers in the makeshift chapel were satisfied, the pilgrims were allowed into the wide, curved space of the chancel proper. Hal melted into the group, drifting forward to the front without obvious effort on his part. It had been little challenge to set these people free from the thugs who captured them on the upper tiers of Hesperides. He watched the assassin murder the hapless guards left behind with casual brutality, making use of his bare hands to do the deed. Under cover of darkness, Halm inserted himself into the group of captives, many of whom had seen no light for days. In the dank, dripping gloom of their haphazard prison, one more frightened face was easy to overlook. He was ready to push them onto the right course with some choice words, but the moment never came. Someone eventually figured out that the silence outside meant the guards were gone, and gingerly pushed open one of the hatches. There they found dead bodies, and in one of the rooms off the main corridor, somebody else discovered another prisoner chained to a chair, a prisoner with a hawkish face and a scarred palm. The hostage pilgrims were so deliriously relieved to be free, not one of them stopped to think that their escape was part of a larger gambit. As the spy hoped, several of them knew where to locate the hidden chapel in the lower levels, and all he needed to do was follow them. Halm heard one man saying that this was the God Emperor's will, and the ease with which the others accepted that meant Halm's armory of prepared lies went unused. He allowed himself a smile, and entertained the thought that this might actually be easy. He liked that idea. The sooner they could bring this mission to a close, the sooner Halm could jettison the mercurial assassin with his monstrous gun and his seesaw moods, the sooner, he reasoned, he could return to the work assigned by his lords. That was where the real war lay, not in these foolish games. He snapped back to the moment. The pilgrims were forming into a queue that wound back through the chapel, and Halm was close to the head of it. He shot a look over his shoulder, seeing 50 or more of the faithful who had journeyed to this rusting hulk of a city on little more than a word and a hope. The believers who had met them with open arms stood in clusters all around, some of them linking hands and speaking litanies to one another. He was very careful not to look upwards, into the dark shadows among the gantries overhead. The assassin had vanished from the group as soon as they arrived in the chapel, and he had to be up there somewhere, waiting for the right moment. Step by step, the pilgrims advanced towards the stage at the far end of the chapel, and Halm felt the ebb and flow of emotion from everyone around him. He put away his smile and kept a fixed expression of humility on his face, not wishing to betray even the smallest iota of his true feeling to the others. In point of fact, Halm despised these religionists. The spy considered their dogged acceptance of a mythical deity to be backward and childish. He would admit that, indeed, the Emperor was an incredibly powerful being, but then so were his sons, and so were their scions, the legionaries. Power of that kind could command fear and loyalty, that was a given. But to suddenly attest numinous nature to a real and quantifiable thing? Such thoughts came from limited minds, unable to appreciate the true nature of existence. There were no gods in the universe, only unknowns. Life existed in a cruel space that neither rewarded nor punished. If Halm believed in anything, he believed in that. The followers in front of him moved forward in a jerky surge, and Halm suddenly found himself at the foot of the stage, near a jury-rigged wooden stair that would allow the pilgrims to climb up and walk across the dais. He looked ahead and saw an old man in what looked like the robes of an imperial iterator, standing close to a dark-skinned woman who scowled at every one of the new arrivals, as if searching for a face that disagreed with her. Halm glanced away without making it obvious as the group shifted forward again, and he heard a female voice cut through the air. "Blessings of the God Emperor be with you," she said, the words soft and perfect. "Go forward in his light. The Emperor protects." Halm found the speaker, and something strange happened. He was at a loss for words. revealed as another of the pilgrims moved away, there stood the target. Halne had seen a hololithic image of the woman taken years earlier, something dredged up from the public data nets, unflattering and basic. It hardly seemed possible that it was the same woman whom he looked upon now. She was changed in a way he could not put into words. She seemed more alive, and there was an energy to her that he could sense even yards away. Charisma, for want of a better term. As he watched, she said the holy litany again for the man who stood in front of him, giving him the blessing of her God. Halne felt a peculiar energy around him, and his heart pounded against the inside of his ribs. Against all willingness, the spy felt a pulse of elation run through him. It was like moving closer to a naked flame, bright and warm and enticing. The target, the saint, looked to him and met his gaze for the first time. Her radiance washed over him, and Halne was torn in two. One voice inside his thoughts rejected whatever gentle witchery she was casting over him, another throwing itself into the glow of it with abandon. The pressure built inside him. It would be easy to take her hand and admit it all, give up the darkness he had shackled himself to. Surrender, redeem whatever remnants of a faded spirit still remained in him. But the other voice won out. He shook it off and ran a hand down his arm. Flesh parted, blood oozed, and the shimmer knife slid into his grip. "This is who I am," Halne told himself, his smile growing wide and cold. He wished he could see the face of the assassin as the blade came alive. The killer had sent him into the crowd to sow distraction, but now chance had put Halne directly at the point of the execution. He laughed aloud at the thought that it would be he, and not Horus's broken vassal, who would end her. The sound was swallowed up in a crash from the other side of the chamber. "No!" The dark-skinned woman saw the vibrating glow of the shimmer knife and shouted, throwing herself into Halne's path. The kills at the sanctuary had not been the random murder of an untrained mind. From the first sight of the fallen, fire-twisted corpses, Garrow had instinctively known that he was dealing with an expert in the art of death. The way the infernal flames had been laid down defied analysis in some places, and there the legionary suspected sorcery was at work. But elsewhere, the pattern of shots and kills fell into a state that approached regularity. The hand that wielded the weapon at the gutted stronghold was methodical and callous, leaving nothing to chance, chasing down every last wounded believer and burning them alive. He wondered if the killer took some form of pleasure from the slow, agonizing deaths. Or was it more arcane than that? Did the killer literally consume that pain? With all the horrors Garrow had faced since the eclipse of the insurrection, he doubted nothing any more. He believed in what he could see, even if that was something preternatural and horrific. And what he had seen at the sanctuary gave him insight into the mentality of the killer. Knowing that gunsight mind, grasping and understanding it, Garrow knew where such an assassin would strike, and fathomed how it might be done. The legionary stood up for the first time in hours, allowing his body to snap back from a low heartbeat, slow slumber state to full combat readiness. Concealing himself in a cluster of coolant pipes, he had blended in and become a piece of the darkness. Now that shadow came apart, and he strode forward, each step ringing on the plates of the suspended gantry. The man stood before him, balanced on the edge of the raised catwalk, with a hand that grasped a bell made of black smoke. He turned to see the new foe that had presented itself, and Garrow glimpsed a masked face. Tarnished steel and shredded sinskin surrounded a baleful Viridian mono eye strip. The mask was damaged, but it was unmistakably that of a clade assassinorum. Garrow drew his sword. "I should have known. The kill profile was familiar to me. You are Vindicare, the outcome that justifies the deed." The assassin cocked his head. "I haven't been that for a long time." Garrow heard the echo of his own words in the reply and grimaced. "What you are now is a traitor." The barb had no effect on the killer. The coil of inky haze in his hand shifted and changed, becoming a solid, glassy form. "Can one betrayed become the betrayer?" He pointed with his other hand. "You are deceived, legionary, as much as I was.
We're all just weapons in the end. But they lie to us. They make us think we are more."
There was uncomfortable truth in those words. But now was not the moment to dwell on them. Garrow raised his sword, thumbing the stud that brought the blade's power field to life. "There will be mercy if you surrender. I can promise no more than that." The smoke gathered into a great pistol of blocky crystal shapes, lit from within by a liquid, hellish luminosity. The form of it was sickly and unreal, and just the act of looking at it made Garrow's jaw clench. The killer balanced the demonic gun easily, making lazy aim towards the chapel below. Garrow saw the recently arrived pilgrims and the rest of Keeler's followers mingled down there, all unaware of what was happening just above them. The form of Indicare shook his head.
"I cannot accept your offer. That choice can only be made by a man. And I told you, I am the weapon."
With a sudden jerk of motion, before Garrow could strike, the assassin tipped backwards over the edge of the gantry and fell to the floor below with a clattering din. Halm planted the shimmer knife in the dark-skinned woman's chest. A quick, in-and-out blow that punctured her aorta. She went down on the dais in a jumble of arms and legs, blood jetting from the wound in her torso.
"Zaon!"
The old man in the robes stumbled after her, too slow and too feeble to catch her before she collapsed. Impotent rage flared on the elderly iterator's face, and he foolishly turned his ire on the spy. He tried to shove Halm back, but he had little strength behind him. Halm battered the old fool away with a hard backhand blow, and it was no different from punching a wrap of dry twigs. The iterator tumbled headfirst off the stage and into the screaming crowd of believers. The fixed, rigid grin on Halm's face faltered a moment as he caught the sound of a fire catching. He paused in his grisly duty and saw the assassin rising from among a pile of crushed chairs. The unhallowed pistol was massive in his pale fist, and Halm knew what would come next. Just as before, in the extermination of the Afric settlement, the demon gun discharged with a firedrake's roar and vomited up a stream of plasma flame. The murderous lance of burning warp energy was itself alive, and it wound through the stale air of the chapel as a sea serpent would move through open water. Blindingly fast, the blazing streamer described twists and turns that no conventional munition would ever have been able to achieve, and everything it touched came alight, consumed from within by a shrieking internal fire. The assassin kept firing, and more snakes of hellish plasma were unleashed into the chamber, dancing and killing as they went. None would survive this, just as none had lived to tell the tale of the deaths at the sanctuary, and this time the tally of kills would include the greatest prize of this idiotic little cult. Halm turned back with the bloody shimmer knife still humming in his grip, and saw the target down on her knees, draped over the body of the woman he had stabbed through the heart. The target had her pale, long-fingered hands over the gushing knife wound, and Halm saw strange, glittering motes of gold misting the air around the injury. She was singing a hymnal to the dying woman, and by no means Halm could grasp, that act was pulling energy from nowhere, keeping her from perishing. With all her attention on her charge, the target seemed barely aware of Halm coming towards her. He decided that he would make his fatal cut across the back of her neck, severing the spinal cord. Garrow sprinted to the edge of the gantry as the odor of burned flesh and scorched metal filled his nostrils. He heard screams and saw bodies falling, their skin seared away in the same grisly fashion as the dead at the sanctuary. Below, the turncoat killer was firing into the crowd with cold abandon. The discharges moved as only living things did. Whips of fire coiling around their victims, burning them, moving on to the next. Perhaps they were some minor phylum of warp creature, squeezed into this plane of reality through the annulus of the demon gun. Garrow understood why the burn patterns in the sanctuary had been so haphazard and unreal. The fire from the weapon was toying with its victims. I must end this. The thought perished half-formed as his gen-hanced hearing pulled a cry from Cinderman out of the melee. Finding the old man through the chorus of shouting and screaming, he glimpsed the iterator fall at the hands of some nondescript man in shabby work clothes. From up here, Garrow could clearly see that the other man had a powered blade of some kind in his grip. He was advancing on Keeler, who had ignored all sense to flee, and instead knelt over the bleeding body of Zaon. The saint was a heartbeat away from joining the injured woman on the road to a painful death. The assassin with the sorcerer's pistol was immediately, undoubtedly, the greater threat. Garrow's tactical mind pushed options into his thoughts, weighing how he could end the gunman's existence as quickly as possible and save the bulk of the followers. But Keela would die if he chose that target over her preservation. Was she worth it? Did this woman have the right to be saved over all the others in the chapel? She would say not, Garrow told himself. That is why she must not perish. Blotting out the screams, the legionary gave himself over to the detached, clinical battle skill that ran through his flesh like a second spirit. He ceded control to muscle memory and the precise, unflinching proficiency that was forged into him. With a snarl, Garrow spun Libertas up and around his head, putting might and momentum into the hilt of the crackling power sword. At exactly the right instant, the weapon slipped from his grip, as if it were escaping of its own accord, and it looped away over the heads of the panicked believers. Harn raised his arm at the beginning of the downward arc that would slash through the saint's unprotected back, and saw a blink of motion from the corner of his eye. He had no time to register it, not even enough for his adapted nervous system to react and push him away. Like a sight from the holy tales of gods and monsters he so reviled, a titan's sword fell from the shadows and cut through him. The blade severed his forearm just above the elbow and then went across his neck and shoulder. Harn was still trying to understand as his head fell away from his body and tumbled to the stage. He glimpsed the mighty weapon embedded in the curved steel wall, his own blood vaporizing into pink smoke off the energized flat of the blade. Beneath it, flung there by force of impact, his bifurcated arm with the hand still clutching the shimmer knife. Without a consciousness to control the skin reactives, his concealed mark of fealty darkened and reappeared. The blue-black ink of the Hydra tattoo, the many heads curving in on themselves. His true fealty as covert auxilia of the 20th Legion, there for all to witness. Harn's severed head rolled, the cut that removed it so fine that nerve impulses were only now starting to misfire, fluids spilling from the clean-cut meat of his neck. Consciousness stayed with him, brain death still long seconds away. He saw his own body, the headless mass, sinking to its knees and jetting blood from its stumps. There was enough energy in him to blink once and move his eyes. In the spy's last moments, his gaze was filled by a woman's face. The target. Harn felt the terrible final panic of this instant, and all he wanted was to get out one last thought, one last regret.
I wanted to see victory.
The woman's sorrow washed over him, and then darkness. Now without a weapon, Garrow was not unarmed. More than his sword, more than a bolter or a suit of powered armor, a legionary alone was the greatest weapon in the arsenal of righteousness. That was an axiom that had been drilled into the warrior as a neophyte. Back when he trained hard under Terra's storm-blackened skies, and the gloom of Barbarus and all it augured were still a lifetime away. He followed the gunman down to the lower level in the same fashion, leaping the gantry and allowing himself to drop 20 feet to the steel deck. For Garrow, it was barely a step, and he struck the metal in a perfect 3-point landing, his robes snapping out around him. Fires burned everywhere, and each one of the shrieking torches was a human being engulfed by cruel witch flame. They were not allowed to die quickly. Whatever brutal animal instinct drove the fire serpents unleashed by the gun, they clearly liked the taste of pain. Garrow ignored the agony around him and broke towards the assassin as he reeled around to bring his accursed weapon to bear. The legionary had no time to make a definitive killing blow. The angle was wrong, and the moment off-kilter. All he could manage was a sweeping backhand that clipped the killer and sent him spinning up and away. The assassin landed hard atop a line of cracked wooden pews and tumbled across them. The strike dislodged the killer's battle-damaged mask, and Garrow came storming towards him, sweeping low to scoop it up as he approached. The corroded, stained metal of the faceplate made it resemble an object centuries old. Garrow sneered and crushed the mask in his hand, shattering delicate crystal circuits and visi-lenses. "Let me see your true face," he spat, as the assassin rose shakily to his feet. The legionary sword was rooted in the wall, across the chaotic, smoke-wreathed chamber, and well beyond his reach. But no matter. Garrow would end this wretch without it, if he had to. The assassin glared at him, and Garrow saw an angular, unkempt face that was a mass of hatred and grim determination. If not for the hellgun in his hand, and the wraiths of morbid light it cast across his features, the killer could have been mistaken for a vagrant pulled from the fetid alleys of some overcrowded hive city. Garrow closed the distance.
"I gave you a chance. You should have taken it."
The assassin did not grace him with a reply. He fired. A gush of volcanic flame erupted from the yawning maw of the glassy pistol, opening into a multitude of blazing streamers that flicked towards the legionary. Garrow thought he saw dark spots at the tips of the fire streaks, reminiscent of arachnid eyes. Then the weapon's warshot was striking him, and he staggered into the infernal deluge. A conflagration hotter than any natural flame he had ever encountered bent and moved around him, holding close to Garrow in a tormented embrace. He felt the material of his robes crisp and catch a light, polymerized synthetic plastithreads, flexible enough to turn a knife blow, now burning like a common weave. The hood rolled at his back, spat and burned, searing the fuzz of shorn hair on his scarred scalp. Garrow forced himself to advance, step upon step towards the gunman, hands raised to protect his face. The halo of flame sang as they consumed the air around him, filling his lungs with choking smoke. He uttered the Warmaster's name as the curse it had become, and snatched handfuls of his burning robes. With a grunt of effort, Garrow ripped the flaming material from his back and flung it away. Beneath, he had only the form-fitting body sheath that he would have worn under his Mark VI Corvus pattern battle plate, the connector ports to his implanted black carapace glittering in the muddy firelight. He shrugged off his own tide of fire, a terrible phoenix, intent only on stopping cold this killer's mission. Leaping at him, Garrow grabbed the assassin's gun hand and forced it up and away, his other hand snatching at the greasy tunic his target wore. The legionary lifted his foe easily off the deck and shook him hard, but the obscene pistol would not be dislodged from the assassin's grip. From the corner of his eye, Garrow saw that the demon weapon appeared to be a seamless part of the man's hand, the glassy matter of the breech, grip, and barrel morphing out of flesh, bone, and blood. Aimed uselessly at the ceiling, the muzzle grunted and flexed like a gasping mouth.
"Why did you turn?"
Garrow bit out the words as he increased pressure with his other hand, feeling ribs crack and grind on one another beneath his implacable grip.
"What did they offer you?"
The uncertainty curdled in his throat. It was a question he could never answer for himself, one that troubled him deeply. So many of his battle brothers in the Death Guard, led to his eternal shame by their gene-sire Mortarion himself, had made the same pact as this man, surrendering their honour to Horus Lupercal's new vision.
"What could be enough?"
he roared, anger fueling him as much as the pain from his burned flesh.
"Truth,"
said the assassin, forcing out the reply.
"What?"
The word hit Garrow like a slap in the face, and there was an instant when he lost focus.
"What truth? Speak it." "My name is Aristide Kell."
The assassin choked in the legionary's death grasp.
"Your god emperor took everything from me. Your sigilites sent me to die."
He showed a mouth of blood-flecked teeth and shouted back at Garrow.
"Horus, set me free."
The demon gun was an impossible weapon, and so its next transformation, the act sudden and ugly, was no shock to Garrow. He saw it happening and realized that this man Kell had drawn him in, used a moment of hesitation against him. The weapon and the hand that gripped its blocky crystalline form both dissembled into a pulse of seething black smoke that remade the component parts. Bone and glass, blood and mist, fed by hatred. In the blink of an eye, the gun was Kell's hand, and Kell's hand was the gun, shifting and moving, a writhing eel thing that bent itself out of Garrow's grip. It turned back along an axis that no bones could have accepted without shattering, to aim point-blank at his face. Garrow had no choice but to let go, arms coming up once more to shield himself. A breath of white-hot plasma ignited before him, and shrieking overpressure blasted the legionary back into a mass of blackened corpses and smouldering matter. He lost precious seconds, reeling from the fiery shock front. Garrow's skin sizzled and cracked where the bite of the flames marked him, and had it not been for the autonomic nerve shunts and the agony inhibitors generated by his bio-implants, every breath would have been misery for the legionary. He was back on his feet, flexing his hands into fists, when a voice cried out his name.
"Nathaniel, here, look to me!"
Garrow turned and saw old Cinderman staggering towards him. The elderly iterator was dragging something behind him, all his strength put into hauling his burden across the chamber. Libertas. Somehow the old man had managed to dislodge it from the wall where the thrown sword had embedded itself, and was attempting to bring it to him. Conflicted thoughts crossed Garrow's mind. Respect for the aging preacher that he could do such a thing, even though he was bruised and bleeding, annoyance that the old fool was putting himself in harm's way. He let the latter take the lead. Garrow dived towards the iterator and shoved him to the floor, pulling the blow as best he could. Even as he moved, he felt new surges of witchfire at his back. The assassin Kell would not stop until he had reduced the legionary to ashes. Cinderman went down in a heap as Garrow snatched back the hilt of his power sword. A surge of confidence bloomed as the familiar weight of the weapon settled into his hand. He had always felt a special bond with the blade, something above and beyond the simple equation of warrior and weapon. A bright object clattered about Libertas's crossguard, and Garrow saw a golden chain wrapped around it, the links ending in an icon of a two-headed eagle. "The Emperor protects. Aye," he thought. "But today, that responsibility falls to me." Kell shouted a foul curse, and Garrow reacted without hesitation. He dragged Cinderman close and shielded the iterator's body as a new wave of murderous flame bathed them both. A hiss of pain escaped the warrior's lips as the outer layer of skin across his back was burned away, exposing the plastiform sheath of his back carapace implant. The torrent of heat seemed to go on forever, and not even the legionary's pain blocks were enough to dam the flow of raw, searing torture. Then, at last, it ceased. But Garrow knew it would only be a few moments before Kell fired again, unleashing another blazing serpent thing from the immaterium, even as the echo of the last shots faded. Drawing a breath laced with the sweet stink of burned human meat, Garrow forced himself to his feet. Cinderman lay on the deck before him, white as milk and trembling in terror.
"Get her out of here," Garrow growled, forcing the words out of his damaged throat. "There's a dock platform at the edge of the district. Go now and stop for nothing."
As Cinderman nodded, a question fell from him.
"Can that witch can kill you?"
"I will find out," Garrow managed.
He came about, each step jamming razors into the dozens of open wounds across his torso and his limbs, and advanced on the assassin through the wreaths of dirty smoke. Sickly vapor streamed from the mouth of the glittering glass pistol as Kell brandished it towards him.
"I think I understand how the Clade Eversor find such joy in their kills," he said, as if speaking to some unseen audience. "Every murder I made before, it was distant and cold. I saw their faces, but I never really knew the moment of death."
He showed Garrow the demonic gun.
"This makes it different. When you are close, you can taste it. It allows you to love the act."
"You are quite mad," spat Garrow.
"Horus did that. Or did he just make use of it?"
Kell's face twisted.
"He let me see. And I've seen you dead, Death Guard. Your heart broken and bleeding black."
"Perhaps," he allowed, fighting back a weariness that reached up from the darkness.
"But it will not be your hand behind it, murderer."
The assassin bared yellowed teeth in a feral snarl and took the demon weapon in a two-handed grip, bracing to aim towards him. The square-cut shape of the muzzle undulated and snapped open into a glass flower, its maw widening in a funnel of crystal petals. Garrow saw baleful fire shimmer within the impossible spaces of the gun's interior a split second before it vomited forth a great comet of flames. The air screamed as it was torn open by the power of such elemental horror forcing its way into reality. A mass of living fire, dancing and swooping above him, came at Garrow in a blinding rush. It had no shape that could be held in the mind for more than a few moments, shifting between forms that could have been avian, arachnid, or humanoid. There might have been a time, before becoming a knight errant, before the War Master's betrayal, when Nathaniel Garrow would have beheld this horror and wondered how he would fight something so utterly unreal. He was no longer that man. This war, Horus's war, had changed him in ways he had never expected, and in this second Garrow realized that whatever doubts he had were now ashes. They had burned away, just like the skin across his body. He was free of them. He did not question how he would fight the demon. He would destroy it as he had every other enemy put before him, with the weapon in my hand and the strength of my soul. Garrow triggered the power field surrounding Libertas's blade at its maximum potentiality. Lethal jags of captured lightning scintillated along the length of the sword, generated and collimated by ancient, time-lost technology. This weapon had brought down tyrants. It had slaughtered rampaging beasts, ended the lives of traitors, and, when called upon, given the Emperor's peace. One more monster would not be its match. Ignoring all sense of caution, Garrow threw himself at the fire form as it swept down on him. Raising his power sword high into a jousting thrust, he pushed himself past the pain from the lashes of flame, bombarding his tormented body, and let the point of the blade find the pulsing heart of the demon. The creature, a primitive predator form from the abyssal deeps of the Immaterium, did not possess the wit to realize that the legionary had used its own momentum against it. Libertas plunged into the core of the abhorrent form, and the energy resonating through its blade flashed free in a catastrophic shock of unleashed power. Unknowable science from the age of old night met unreal anti-life from another dimension and cancelled out its existence. Blue aurorae rippled through the fire demon, and with a cry that chilled the blood, it combusted into a haze of orange-black embers. Whatever malevolent quintessence had motivated the creature was sent screaming back to the warp, and Garrow's sword became dead metal once again, its power drained for now. No! Kell shook his head wildly. Whatever brief clarity his tortured mind had known now dispersed like the demon. He raised the gun again, aiming at Garrow's chest.
You should die! You are supposed to die! That is how it will be! I have done it before! I will do it again!
Enough! Snarled the legionary, and Libertas sang through the choking air on a downward arc. Powered or not, the age-old sword was still a formidable tool of battle. The cut cleanly severed Kell's hand at the wrist, the shock knocking him back as the lump of flesh and glass spun to the deck. The assassin's howls echoed off the curved walls, but Garrow ignored him. He watched as the severed hand flopped back and forth of its own accord, like a landed fish, dragging the profane crystal mass of the gun with it. Meat and bone became molten, changing shape once more. The weapon took control of the flesh and remade itself into a form that resembled a scarab beetle, grimy fingers for legs and a vitreous block for a shell. Garrow stepped to the thing and impaled it on the tip of his sword before it could completely reconfigure itself. It burst in a welter of blood, oil, and silvery pus. For good measure, the legionary stamped what remained into the deck plates, grinding it to nothing beneath his heel. A trail of dark fluid led him to the assassin, as the man stumbled across the makeshift chapel towards the altar. "She is gone," Garrow called after him. "You failed in your mission."
"Not the first time,"
gasped Kell, refusing to accept defeat.
"No."
Fatigue pulled at Garrow, and he knew it was his body's energy racing to repair the grievous damage wrought by the witchfire. He shook it off and aimed a finger at the other man.
"Aristide Kell, I name you traitor. Stand and answer for your crime."
"Traitor?" echoed the assassin. "We are all traitors in the end, legionary. We are all betrayed. And then, the betrayer. You are no different than I."
Garrow's lip curled.
"I did not swear fealty to the first Primarch to turn against his father." "But you did turn against your father."
Kell shot back, cradling the bloody stump of his wrist close to his chest.
"Your kinsmen, too. Traitor. What does the word mean? It changes color depending on where you stand. All that anyone can know is that we will eventually be betrayed."
His words trailed off into a painful wheeze.
"Are you prepared to save her?"
The question came from nowhere. "Save who?"
You know. Are you ready to surrender everything for her?
Kell looked away, his watery gaze suddenly lost and distant.
I was. All for nothing.
Garrow's sword turned in his hand, shifting to a backhand grip as he closed the distance between them. This ends now. He raised the weapon, point downward.
It won't,
said Kell. But then the blade dropped through his clavicle and down inside his ribcage, cutting his heart in two and freeing the assassin from whatever bargain he had made with the Warmaster. Alone now, with only the murdered and the ashen fires surrounding him, Garrow withdrew the sword from the corpse and watched it fall.